The anticipation for Survivor Cambodia is almost over, but you won't ever have to wait to get a great deal at Amazon.com. Find the best deal on everything you need, and you'll help support Rob Has a Podcast with every purchase you make using our link and never have to pay a penny more when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon or for our friends in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. And one last quick thing before we jump into the show. We're going to be talking about some of the news about pregame alliances that people have talked about in their pregame interviews. We have no idea if any of these pregame alliances ultimately did anything in the actual game. But if you're especially sensitive to that sort of stuff and you don't want to hear about it, that's going to be around the 29-minute mark in this podcast. So if you want to skip the podcast or stop listening at that point, I totally understand. But it's stuff that's out there in the pregame interviews, so it's something that we're talking about here in this podcast. Enjoy the show. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who is beginning his second chance to talk about Survivor Cambodia, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. And we're back, baby. We are back. Very excited for our first official podcast of the Survivor 31 preseason. That feels good to say. And joining me today is a man who I talked to on the reg, and he has a lot to say because he was out in Cambodia with the cast and crew of Survivor Cambodia. Welcome back to the podcast, our good friend Josh Wiggler. Josh, how are you?
I'm good, Rob. Oh my God, I'm so glad that you made it back to Los Angeles safe and sound.
Yes.
Oh. I've been really holding my breath for the past 2 days that you would make it okay. I've been very worried.
Good. Yeah, I was in New York for a week visiting family. I am back here, ready to go. It was perfect timing to have this everything drop here on Tuesday, August 25th. We are within 1 month until the premiere of Survivor Cambodia, and I can't wait to start getting into it. But Josh, this is so odd for me because Typically this is when we start the run up to a season and we start do this podcast, the seven things that we know or that you need to know about Survivor, the upcoming season. And it's like, wait, who are these people? There's a person who is a professional golfer on this season. What is this about? What's that going to be like? And this time we know all of the people that are on the season, but now it's officially open season to talk about it.
Yeah, and you and I know them super well because we just spent the past year of our lives talking about every single one of these bozos.
Yeah. Josh and I are in the midst of wrapping up our 30-season Survivor rewatch of The Evolution of Strategy. Volume 3 is currently dropping one chapter a week. We just released the Philippines chapter this Friday. The Survivor Karamoan chapter is going to drop. And over the last 14 months, we have watched every single episode of Survivor.
That's insane. That's insane. We're terrible people. Yes. It's not good. It's not great.
But we've been enjoying it and going more and more insane along the way. And now we finally have new Survivor that we are going to be getting to talk about. And I'm really excited to get into this with Josh because he was out there in Cambodia. And even though we talk all the time, we really have not spoken about this. So I'm very excited to talk with Josh for the first time about his adventure and what he can tell us about his. How many days were you there?
I was there for about 5 days all told. I was there for maybe even six. I was there for like a day or two before the thing started. I was there for the first 3 days of the game. So that's going to be the first episode. And then I had a travel day after that. So it was a nice little string of days. It was a very fun time in Cambodia.
And for those of you guys who only know Josh from hearing him on this podcast and from his work on post-show recaps with me covering scripted television, Josh has been doing exit press and interviews and stories on Survivor on Parade.com for the last couple of years. And this was the first time he ever went out on location to do the pregame press.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. And I've been working pretty hard to get there. It was very surreal to get out there. It's crazy to have the chance to finally be talking about it. I mean, I've been sitting on this since the beginning of June, just like kind of counting the clock and waiting to be able to talk about it because I'm so excited about what I got to see. I'm really excited about what this season has in store. Some of these twists are now out in the open. We're going to talk about them today. And I think that Survivor is going in a really, really awesome direction. So having spent the past 14 months talking about Survivor with you, Rob, I'm actually more excited about Survivor than ever before right now. And that's a very weird thing and probably says a lot about me as a human being. Nothing good. Nothing good.
And I really like what you're doing with your pregame press because I think you have a different take on it than anybody else is doing. It's very first person and it really is like a story of your time there. How did you come up with the idea to do it that way?
Yeah, I don't know. So what I'm doing basically is I am writing kind of firsthand accounts of what I'm experiencing out there in Cambodia. Basically, what I got to do is I got to interview all 20 of the people who were playing this season the day before the game started. I got to post up in Ponderosa. I had a beautiful cabana all to myself with a nice oscillating fan. It was lovely. It was fantastic. And all 20 of the people came through my cabana that day. They were great conversations. They were fascinating conversations. It was kind of like being at the zoo and seeing my favorite animals up close in person, except they were Survivor players, but they were all these legendary people that I've been talking about for the past year and thinking about for the past however many years that this show has been on. It was very strange to me and a very surreal sight. And I mean, you can ask anybody who is out there. You could ask Dalton Ross. You could ask Gordon Holmes, Parvati. These people will verify that I was pretty much just losing my mind the entire time I was out there because I was just nerding out very, very hard. I was laying eyes on Survivor. I never thought that I'd get the chance to do that. I applied for the show a very long time ago, right after Survivor Cook Islands won. I had applied for the show just kind of on a whim. I pretended to eat my neighbor's cat. I was shirtless in a snowbank. I did not get a phone call back. I'm not surprised. But I kind of gave up on it then, and somewhere along the way in the past couple of years, when you and I probably were talking about Survivor One World for MTV, I thought that maybe I could get a chance to get out there as press. And so I've been working really hard to make that happen, and it finally happened this year, and I was just going mental watching everything in front of me. I was watching immunity challenges. I got to see the marooning firsthand. I got to meet Jeff Probst and watch all of these things happen, and I feel like the experience that I had of being, you know, a real nerd for the show, someone who's wanted to be out there forever, I felt like I could capture something that hopefully I'm conveying in some of these stories. So yeah, they're first person. It starts with me at the Worlds Apart finale. I was in the room for that. So I was in the room when the Second Chance cast got selected. I got to see them go up on stage. It was one of the most nerve-wracking experiences of my life. I can't even imagine what it was like for those people. I was literally, I think I said this to you when we did the Worlds Apart wrap-up podcast. I was on the edge of my seat and people around me were like, are you really this nervous? Like, yes, I am. And I was invested in it because I knew I was going to be talking to these people in a few days. And as soon as that cast got finalized, I was so stoked because it was such a rock star cast. There wasn't a single person. There were two people up there that I wasn't necessarily voting for, but I was really excited to see them get the nod. There wasn't a single person on there I wasn't pumped about. So I was very excited about that. That's where the perspective kind of starts. And the rest of the stories include sort of this big opening piece that's encapsulating all of the experiences I had while I was out in Cambodia, framed with Jeff Probst talking to me, and it kind of cuts off just as Jeff Probst and I are about to sit down and we're doing a fantasy draft of all of the Survivor players that are out there this season. It's right after the marooning, so not a lot has happened yet. Jeff gives me his winner prediction. I make mine, and the rest of the stories now are building up toward that moment, analyzing the cast, taking quotes from the interviews that I had with these people, and kind of telling stories about every single one of them, drawing from their past, lots of flashbacks to their big iconic moments in earlier seasons, some of them not even super iconic moments, and then some flash forwards from some of my observations from the beach that I got to see on day two. It's a little experimental. It's a little funky. It's a little weird. And the reason I'm doing it this way is I figure, you know, a guy like Dalton Rossi has unprecedented access to Survivor and his stuff is incredible. The videos he puts out, he's going to have so much great stuff. Gordon Holmes, I don't think that there's a better person doing Q&As in Survivor right now than Gordon. And I think that this is something that I can do. I do feature writing. It's what I'm paid for in my life outside of post-show recaps and Survivor and all of this stuff. That's what I do on a daily basis. And I think that I can bring that to the Survivor preseason coverage. And that's something that I really wanted to do. So while you and I have been recording this crazy audiobook over the past year, I've been spending like the last 6 weeks basically writing a Survivor novel. And that is now what is being unleashed, a new story every day. And I'm really, really jazzed for you guys to read it.
So what you're saying basically is that you're like a storyteller. This is what you do.
What I do? Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who the good guys and the bad guys are. No easy answers.
So if you want to follow along Josh's story, it's really, really fun read. Go to check out robiswebsite.com/parade. That's the link with all of the articles that Josh has written on parade.com. Or you can just follow Josh on Twitter. He's at Round Howard.
Yes. Yeah, please do that. I've been very excited about this. The response has been really kind. I've been really touched by the response I've gotten. And hopefully I won't let you down. I think the first stories that I came out with today as we're recording this, it's August 25. And I released my big Probst interview, and I had a really, I thought a pretty fun Keith Nail story to tell. So that was kind of the tone that we set.
Yeah. All right. So we'll cover some of that stuff as we get into this. Of course, this podcast is 7 things you need to know about this upcoming season. And then you might be saying, wait, hold on. I already know who's everybody that's on it. And there's stuff you don't know.
There's stuff.
Unless you did a lot of research today, then you probably know the same stuff
then
that we
do. Then you probably know the stuff.
But you weren't in Cambodia like Wiggler.
Nope. I had feet on the beach. What's up?
All right. So we're going to go into all of that. First Survivor podcast of the preseason. Let me just get the subscription link out there. Make sure you don't miss any of the podcasts that we're going to be doing this season. We're going to do probably about 9,000 hours of Survivor coverage this season. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for the main podcast on iTunes. Or you could also subscribe to our Survivor only feed at robhasawebsite.com/Survivor podcast. Let's talk about this. Number one, I wish we had like drops of these.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be great, but we don't have that. So here we go. The number one thing that you need to know, where this isn't going to be a countdown backwards. We're starting with the lead, our top story at this hour. The first thing you need to know about Survivor Cambodia is that we have 20 people and we have 2 tribes here to start the game, and we know who is on what tribe.
Yes. The tribes have been announced. It is the Bayonne tribe, not from Bayonne, New Jersey, and Takeo. 2 tribes going head to head. We know the divisions. You want to give it to them? You want to tell everybody what's up?
Yes. So the Bayonne tribe, we have 5 men, 5 women. They are. Here are the 5 women. It is from Survivor Blood versus Water, Sierra. Then we have Kagyan's Tasha, Australia's Kimmy. You guys know what seasons are on. Cass and Monica Padilla. Kind of forgot Monica Padilla was on the season over the summer. Yeah.
You were so high on Monica Padilla.
I know, but maybe that speaks to that she'll be under the radar.
Who did you think was on there?
I didn't think a new person was on instead of her. I just forgot she was one of the people.
Okay.
We're doing it for Monica.
For Monica. What's good for Monica?
What is good for Monica?
Oh, that's the wrong Monica.
Then the guys on the Bayonne tribe are Joe, Jeremy, Keith, Savage, and our own Stephen Fishback.
Stefan.
Wow. We're talking about Stephen Fishback on a Survivor tribe right now.
How about that? That's pretty wild. It was weird to see him out there.
I bet.
It was very fun. It was very fun. It was weird. It was strange.
Let's talk about, how do you pronounce this? The Takeo?
Takeo.
As in George Takeo?
That's right. The Star Trek actor.
Oh my.
The prolific Facebook user.
Here they are. They are Vetus, Spencer, Terry Dietz, Jeff Varner, Wu, PG, Shireen, Kelly Wentworth, Kelly Wigglesworth, and Abby Maria. You would think they would have split up the 2 Kelly W's.
I was surprised as well. When I saw Kelly Wentworth and Kelly Wigglesworth rowing up together, it's like, oh, they are keeping those 2 together. I wonder how they are going to differentiate between the 2. I think we're going to get a lot of last names this season.
Let's talk about the 2 tribes and let's talk about them each separately. Talk about the Bayonne tribe. So definitely some interesting things that we have here. We have Jeremy and Keith on the same tribe.
Yeah, Jeremy and Keith on the same tribe from San Juan del Sur. They're paired up.
We also have Cass and Tasha on the same tribe.
Yeah, so there's a couple of these people on both tribes, actually, who've played together. I mean, for some of this, it's just kind of unavoidable. Kagyan has 4 people. People were going to end up playing together. It's just how it's going to break out. But it's interesting the way that they were divided. And as I understand it, the divisions basically came down to trying to do it as much of a one-for-one analog as humanly possible. Like, you're not going to get Andrew Savage and Terry Dietz on the same tribe. They're both sort of the older dudes, fit. Have kind of these leadership qualities, or at least remembered as leaders on their tribe. So you're going to split those guys. You're not going to have Stephen Fishback and Spencer on the same tribe. They're both kind of the brainy strategists. You're going to split those guys up. And then I think that there's past season stuff that's being taken into account as well in the splits. So I think that you could see that if you put the 2 tribes side by side, you can kind of see the rationale for where things broke.
Now, do you like this idea of two tribes and the returning players?
Yeah, I mean, you and I talked about this on Heroes Villains. During the Heroes Villains chapter of the Evolution of Strategy, we talked about this a lot of, you know, something that you suffered from in a huge way in All-Stars is that there was not a lot of places for you to hide. It was six people. It was a very difficult situation. You got picked off pretty easily just by virtue of who you were. I'm trying to be kind to you right now.
I don't have to make it that I got picked off so easily.
It was fairly easy. wasn't that? You had no idea it was coming. The look on your face. So I think with two tribes of 10, easier to hide, perhaps. Maybe not so much with a competition like this. You know, it's very stiff competition out here this season, but there's a little more room to play around. I love the two tribe format for an All-Star season. I think it's great.
And going back and watching a season like Heroes versus Villains, like we did over these past few months, that 10 person tribe is really a great way to be able to have, you know, anything could happen. You have a couple people. Okay, these two people are on the same season. Okay, so what? Now it's like, still figure it out. Whereas in a group of six, it really is very easy for two or three people to pair up and sort of have a stranglehold on a tribe.
Right. Well, what's your take looking at this? You know, looking at the season, going into this, looking at the cast, you do have a bunch of people that are, you know, from the same season. You've got four people from Cagayan, three from San Juan del Sur. You got a bunch of twos in the mix as well. Does this, if you're a Survivor player and you're out there, does that ping on your radar or does it not matter as much to you?
It doesn't bother me a ton because I don't feel like too many of those people are in lockstep. It's hard to say, especially after watching Survivor Cagayan this summer, or rewatching it, to feel like, okay, the four people from Cagayan, they're together. Like if it was four or five people from Survivor Worlds Apart, where, you know, the Dirty 30 and they're all hanging out, I think you'd be much more intimidated of that voting block than say, oh, I think that the three people from Survivor San Juan del Sur are all together. And it's like, I don't really think Jeremy and Keith and Kelly Wentworth are coming into this game as a voting block.
Right.
And I don't think that the Cagayan people are coming in as a voting block. So while there are numbers from a couple of these seasons, I'm not super intimidated that they're all working together.
Okay.
But this is really an interesting group in terms of looking at this. This is the first time I really tried not to this summer. I know that there were websites where you could go to and you could have seen this, where I tried to ignore the tribes as much as I could over the summer. So I really haven't been spending too much time spinning my wheels trying to think about how this is all going to play out. But I do feel like in terms of Stephen Fishbeck, I feel like this is a pretty soft landing spot for him. I don't think that there's anybody in this group that are going to be saying, I got to get out Stephen.
Who do you like on his tribe for Stephen? How do you feel about Stephen's tribe?
I think that Joe seems like he's a bigger target than Steven is going to be. And I feel like that he's somebody who could be taking some of the attention off of him. And I also feel like Cass is there and she's more of a lightning rod. And I feel like that maybe she could be, you know, deflecting some of the attention away from Steven. I mean, he definitely could be a target, but does Keith really know what Steven is doing?
Yeah. In the interviews that I did, so I talked to all 20 of these people, and I don't think that anybody's name came up more often than Stephen Fishbeck.
As in, boy, what a great guy.
It was all, that guy seems real nice. I like his glasses. It looks like he's been working out. He seems like a handsome fellow. I love him on the podcast. I think that he's just the best man on the planet Earth. That was not what was said. That was not what was said.
Why? What were people telling you? Because you sat down with each of these people before the game. What kind of stuff can you tell us?
Yeah, what I could say is I could tell you the types of questions that I was asking everybody. I was asking, you know, what do you think of bigger season blocks? What do you think of yourself being part of that? What do you think of the people who are here representing their own tribes, their own seasons? What do you think? Who's worrying you? Who are you excited to see? Questions like that. And Steven's name came up a lot. In a lot of different ways. There is, you know, half of the people seemed really excited about him. Half of the people were not so excited to see him. He was a very popular guy on the minds of a lot of people for good and bad reasons. And there's a moment when I was sitting down with Steven where he was thinking that he's probably not going to be able to play the way that he played the first time completely because he's not going to have this, you know, sort of under the radar ability, he didn't think. He was absolutely right when he was talking to me that he's very much on people's radar. I thought that was very fun. And sitting in a room with Stephen Fishbeck in a super sweaty Cambodian cabana, knowing all of this and not being able to say anything was delicious.
Sounds fun.
It was good. He was a very sweaty guy. Very sweaty guy that day. But Steven's a very popular guy. So I think to my point of you saying that Joe is somebody who's super on the radar, Cass is somebody who's super on the radar, you're not sure how Steven's going to be on the radar. All of these people are on the radar, and Steven's name came up a bunch.
Can you give us some other people that were either thought of highly by the group or people who were also in that Steven category of people that had sort of a target on their back from the players and the interviews that you did?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, listen, just wait for the Jeff Varner interview. Jeff Varner has a lot to say about basically every single person in the game and really basically every single person on his tribe. We'll get to that in a minute. But Varner had a lot to say. I mean, everybody had a lot to say about everybody. Cass has a ton to say about the Kageyan people. She told me if she's not kept in the loop on the vote, she'll just write Spencer's name down every single time. She's on a different tribe as Spencer, but maybe she would just write his name down anyway.
Because there was a little bit of thought going into this of, yeah. Is that just for show?
Yeah, I don't think so. at least based on the interviews that I had, I don't think so. I don't think that was just for show. So, you know, these were the kinds of conversations that were happening there. And everybody had something to say about everybody. There's nobody who went unmentioned this day. Even a guy like Keith, a guy like Wu, people who we talk about as not being necessarily the savviest Survivor players out there. These are people whose names are getting mentioned. Kimmy Cavenberg getting talked about a lot. A lot of people had stuff to say about Kimmy. So everybody is on the radar here. No one has, you know, there's room to hide in groups of 10, but everybody is being watched. And I think that that's what's really interesting about this cast is they've had a lot of time to study each other up. You know, they knew who their potential competitors were for weeks leading up to this thing. Everybody has an idea about everybody.
Let's go to the other tribe. I want to make sure I pronounce it. George Takeo.
George Takeo.
I think that this is a lousy name for a tribe as much as I love George Takei, because it sounds a lot like TKO.
TKO.
Which is bad.
Uh-huh.
Like
the headlines write themselves.
Right. Like Oolong got a TKO.
Right.
That was a Takeo tribe.
Yes.
So let's talk about them. And now we have a couple people here again that know each other. Of course, we have Spencer and Wu on the same tribe. I feel like that's pretty good for the young lad, right?
You like that for the young lad. Why do you like that for the young lad? Wu was reamed out by Spencer in the final tribal council. Called him a dog.
That's true, but I feel like Wu is not the kind of guy that holds a grudge, and I feel like Spencer and Wu, that final tribal council, maybe Spencer is wishing he could take that back with Wu, but I feel like he's got a really good read on Wu, and I feel like that he's somebody, at least he has to know that Wu isn't scheming and plotting against him. If he is, I think he'd feel like he could see that out pretty quick.
Right. Who are some of the other dynamics you're excited about?
Well, we've got some fun, I think, with Shireen and Abby Maria potentially on the same tribe. That could be very interesting. We have the Vetus and Terry connection on the same tribe.
Yes, through the Aris thing.
Yeah.
Two battering rams,
and I think that that is pretty interesting. I think that Vetus and Spencer, I think, could potentially have a connection. We have two of the older guys.
Did Vetus like Spencer's yoga campaign video?
He seemed like he had never seen it before. But the thing about all this, Josh, is I'm really starting to feel like as I hear more and more of these interviews that happen, I think a lot of people were lying to me when we did our second chance interviews. And I got to say, I have a little bit of mixed feelings about this.
Oh, what? How could you be upset about this? This is great.
Is it?
You get lied to all the time. This is just the first time that you know it.
I guess so.
Talk me through your mixed feelings, because I agree with you. I do think you were lied to quite a bit. I think you were used, Rob.
That's fine. Use me as a tool. That's what I've been saying all these years.
You've been turned into a tool.
And now I have been turned into a tool, even more so than before, because I think if you go back and listen to a lot of these second chance interviews that I did, I don't think that these answers line up with what people are saying back during the actual pregame interviews of this.
Right.
And so I think that that's going to be pretty interesting to go back and listen to. And if anybody's really bored over the next couple of weeks, it might be fun to see what matches up with what, or even after the season is over, that might be especially fun. But I feel like if I had the opportunity to do the second chances over again, or if we do second chances again in the future, I think I'm going to be a lot more ready to call people out if people are going to be lying to me. Now it's tribal council.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I would say this, you know, talk about Stephen Fishback's name coming up a lot in these interviews. Your name came up a decent amount as well. People talking about the interview I did with Rob or the interview that person did with Rob. I listened to that. I listened to this. People were paying attention. And the game, as Tarzan would say, was afoot. And I think that that's something that's unique about this season is that the game was being played in public for at least 2 weeks. We could talk about the pregame stuff in a little bit in more detail. But the game was being played. It was being played in public, and you were a part of it. Whether you knew it or not, you were being lied to. They were using you as opportunities to get messages across. you know, they were trying to model their
sleeper
images
cells?
That people would see. Yeah, that's what's going on.
Oh, my God.
So you were in the hub of it. You were in the hub of it just like Cassandra.
Just like Cassandra. Just like how I want
to
be.
Yeah, that's where you like to be. I wouldn't feel mixed. If I were you, I'd feel fantastic about that.
No, I mean, it doesn't really bother me. It's just interesting to know, okay, these are what these people are lying to me. But I say, Josh, if they're lying to me about this, what else are they lying to me about?
What else are they lying about, period? These filthy liars. You dirty, dirty people. I think that the lesson that you should absolutely take away from this is if Second Chance is a success and Survivor wants to do this again and you get the opportunity to have people on your podcast, go hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to go hard. You got to go hard. You got to do like the Patrick Stewart blunt talk thing. you just got to really not let them go easy. You got to go really hard on these people because they're using you, dude.
Okay. Well, I'm going tip top toes with these people next time.
What's really raising the flag for you on this though, in terms of something that somebody said to you then versus what you're seeing today? What's something that's raising a red flag for you?
Well, I think that we'll get to that in our next entry and number two that we're going to talk about.
Sure.
A couple more quick things in terms of the tribes and these people. What about the people from Survivor 30 in Joe and Shireen? Were they top of mind for a lot of the people that you talked to? Because their finale, we have to remember, it's been months for us, but when you went out there, it was what, a week after the finale?
Yeah, not super long. I mean, super long for them. Not super long in terms of where we are now. It was about a week, a little bit more. And I think, they were talked about, of course. How could they not be? You know, the comment that Shireen made during the finale of I made my first million at 25, that came up. So things about these people absolutely came up. One of the people on Bayonne absolutely said, I think that Joe is in trouble. These are definitely people that were discussed.
Was there anybody that came into your tent that really just blew you away? That anybody that you said, wow, this person is really, I really like what they're coming in here with.
I mean, this is sucking kneecaps, but I was blown away by everybody. I was very blown away to see everybody in terms of what their actual game was. So many of them had so much to talk about, had so much that they wanted to do. Some of it sounded like it wasn't going to work to me based on what other people were saying, but also just based on how I think that Survivor usually gets played in successful ways. But there were a lot of people who were just blown me away by their legendary status, but also by what they were talking about. I think that somebody who, if you ask anybody who's done interviews in the pregame for this season, if you ask them who was somebody that was a real standout to you, and I think that this could be a segue into our next point, is Jeff Varner. Dude had a lot to say.
How did the players react to the actual vote? I'm sure that a lot of people were shocked that Shane wasn't there. Were there any takeaways from how America voted?
Yeah, that was a very fun thing, was that Shane Powers came up a bunch. You know, a lot of people who were bummed that Shane wasn't there. I would ask, you know, one notable one was I asked Terry, were you surprised that Shane's not out here? He said, I'm bummed. Aren't you bummed? I said, yeah. He said, you're a Survivor fan. You had to be bummed. So there's a lot of people who were upset about that. I made fun of Stephen Fishback because I knew as part of his prep for this season, he had watched Survivor Africa. So he wasted a lot of time on his Teresa Cooper strategy. I made fun of him about that.
Did Stephen watch a lot of seasons?
I don't know. I don't know how many seasons he watched. I know because he tweeted about it that he had seen Survivor Africa.
Okay.
So I made fun of him about that. There were people who you know, I think that Joe would have liked to have seen Max Dawson out there, was something that he said to me. But Joe and Shireen both were very happy that the Worlds Apart cast that ended up being out there was no more than two. I think that they would have felt like they really had a dirty 30 target on their back going into this.
Okay, good. No dirty 30 target for Shireen and Joe. Let's get to number two on our list. And that is that we are starting to find out that some players may have had some pregame alliances going into the game. Okay.
Did you believe it?
Can you believe it?
Before a season of Survivor featuring returning players. How about that?
Now, I talked to a number of players before the game started. Nobody had a pregame alliance.
Uh-huh. Well, what are they going to do? They're going to come on here and say that they have a pregame alliance? What do you think? What did you think was going to happen,
But this
Rob?
Is tribal council. So you say, you know what, Rob?
No.
I think everybody has a pregame alliance.
It was tribal council, and you didn't realize it. You didn't know that you were in tribal council.
No, I didn't push back. I didn't push back like Jeff.
Yeah, you had to put your Jeffrey Probst hat on.
Okay, that's
fine.
They're
great podcast.
Yeah,
by the way.
Very fun.
Fantastic listening.
Like everybody got a free pass one time.
One time.
One time.
You'll have your second chance.
Okay,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, the pregame alliances are real, and they started coming out in the pregame, and there's actually there's this fantastic video that Mikey Glazer from The Wrap, friend of RHAP.
Great friend of RHAP.
Yeah, he put together something incredible because the castaways, they did press in Los Angeles before they came out to Cambodia, and honestly, what he got in that video, just the way he packaged it, is so delicious. Oh, my God, and it's very similar to a lot of the stuff that I heard while I was out there. Mostly from Jeff Varner, believe it or not. Jeff Varner is the guy who's gossiping around and talking to everybody.
So we'll talk about this. First off, let me just give you the link. I'll embed this video on robiswebsite.com. But if you want to check out the Mikey Glazer YouTube channel, that's Glazer, G-L-A-Z-E-R. He's talking with a bunch of the different players pregame in the green screen. Now, before we're going to talk about what some of the stuff that we're hearing, bear in mind, this is all from the pregame. If we would have gotten this sort of content before Blood versus Water, Aris probably would have been out there like, oh, I've got a pregame alliance with Jervis. We've got it all planned out. We've figured everything out. What's going on? I'm talking to Tina. I'm talking to whatever. And we would have said, oh, the whole season. Well, now we know how it's all going to go. Pregame alliance, not always worth the paper it's written on.
Sure. But I think what's interesting about this season is that it's a discussed thing. It exists. Like it's something, you know, you hear whispers about it. You know that it's happening, but you never really see about it. There's never anything official, but we have people on the record talking about it this season. And that's very fun. It's very fun. And I think you're absolutely right. Who knows how it'll actually play out. But the fact that it exists in this portion of the game, in the preseason part of the game, very fun.
Because it's a dangerous game to play. Because then when you get on the beach, it's like, oh, did you hear that this person has a pregame alliance with this person? Like, oh, okay, they got to go.
Yes, yes. It's very, very dangerous. Very risky thing. And I think, you know, a lot of players who come back to Survivor when it's a big returning season like this, I think the question is, do I take the call? Do I make the call? All of this stuff, you know, how do I deal with this? You know, what's the right move? I don't know that I want to pregame because I don't want that to put a target on my back. But what if I don't pregame at all and everybody else is pregamed? So it's a real head game. It really is. It really messes with you. What was your approach going into All-Stars in terms of the pregame? I know we probably talked about this on Evolution, but can you just refresh my memory and everybody else?
Yeah, my thoughts on it was to just become friends with everybody. Just try to be in as good with people as possible. And I think that that's probably still the right approach, even though it didn't work out great for me. I feel like I told people, if anybody asked my advice on this, I said, answer the phone if it rings. Don't be the one making the outgoing calls.
Right.
And I think that that's a smart way to do it because you don't want to piss people off. You don't want to not take Abby Maria's phone call if she's calling you to make an alliance. I don't know how many phone calls she did make.
A lot of baggage.
Yeah, she is baggage.
She's baggage.
So I think that that's a good thing to do, to talk to people that are talking to you. Don't snub people, but also don't be that out there and forward about asking people to be in pregame alliances. So how many pregame alliances did you hear about when you were talking with people in the pregame of the show? Who knows if they ultimately took hold in the game?
You know, it's interesting. The interviews that I got, there wasn't a ton of talk about pregame alliances in the conversations that I was having. Maybe I wasn't asking the question directly enough. In fact, I know I wasn't. I didn't want to blow up anybody's spot from what I'd been hearing from certain people about who they like and don't like and all that stuff. So I wanted to be very careful about asking the question of, do you have a pregame alliance and who is it with? Jeff Varner is the guy that really volunteered some info for me. And this is the content of Mikey's video, which can you set up what happens in Mikey's video?
there's a lot of Jeff Varner talking about the people that are in his alliance, in his pregame alliance, and he goes through and he names them, and Mikey does a really good job of putting them up on the screen as he names them, and then does a little bit of matching with the other people that he's talking about in their videos to talk about who they're working with.
This is it's a great visual that I was dying watching this because it really mirrored my experience.
So Jeff Varner, he talks about how he is very close with Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yes.
It talks about how they did practice of like cutting ropes and stuff like that. Kelly Wigglesworth, though, does not give up any information talking about that she is working with Jeff Varner.
Stonewall Kelly Wigglesworth didn't give up anything when I talked to her either. She's the shortest interview that I had out there by far. I think we talked for like 7 minutes. It was very fast. It was very quick. It was interesting as hell. It was captivating because I'm talking to freaking Kelly Wigglesworth, and she loved that my last name is Wiggler. But we didn't have a ton to talk about because she was talking to me like the game is very simple, that the game is not so different from what it was. Find an alliance, get an alliance, do well with your alliance. Meanwhile, behind my back, and I know this from having talked to Jeff, at least from what Jeff Varner told me, she's been in cahoots with this dude.
Yeah. How does it feel now, Wiggler?
Yeah, I felt lied to, and it was great, but at least I knew I was being lied to in the moment.
Yeah.
That was different. That was actually really fun.
The Kelly Wigglesworth thing is so interesting to me because I think she's such a wild card in this game because she doesn't seem like she gives an F, but what if she actually does?
What if she gives all the F?
What if she does? But what if she just doesn't give an F about production or interviews or Rob has a podcast or anything like that? What if she's just there as straight up mercenary? She's only there to play the game and win the money.
Or what if she does care about all the podcasts? What if she does care about all
the
interviews?
Well, then she's doing a really bad job.
What if she has seen every season of Survivor and hasn't missed a single episode? What if she owns all of the TVs?
Yeah, well, that's not true.
That's not
true. That we could throw out of the realm of possibility.
That's out. But you're saying what if she, because she comes off as a little apathetic in your interview with her. She, with me, was very stone cold business about it and just kind of, this is fun. It's going to be great. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. You're saying, what if she has just been playing going into this thing? What if she is just in total merc mode?
Not even playing. What if she's just like, I'm not giving anybody anything. I'm not giving production anything. I'm not giving interviewers anything.
Yeah.
I don't care about being on TV and being famous. The only thing I care about is the money.
Mm.
What if that's her angle?
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting. I think it could make her a wild card. I have no sense of if that's the case or not, but I feel like there's at least some hint that maybe that's what's going on. If she's saying that she's in an alliance, or if Jeff Varner is saying, I'm in an alliance with her, and she's saying, I'm not in an alliance with Jeff Varner, or she's not even mentioning anything about an alliance.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in Mikey's video, Varner says he's been neti potting with Kelly
Wigglesworth. Yeah, I mean, they're doing yoga. He says they're doing all of this activity together.
Neti potting is like when you put things in your nose, right?
Yep, it's the water.
It's like the teapot that you shove up your nose clears out your sinuses.
That's right.
Would you neti pot with me?
Are we sharing the same neti pot or are we using?
We kind of have to share the same neti pot, don't you think? So that we can be truly connected?
I guess so.
Pass it back and forth?
Is
that not how it works?
I don't know if you sterilize it in between. I'm not into sharing the neti pots.
Are you putting money out for two neti pots?
I don't think they're that expensive.
I don't know.
We got important stuff to talk through.
All right. Okay.
Jeff Varner is also talking about how Shane is in the mix. Now, we can corroborate this story because the night after everybody left town, Shane Powers was here.
He talked about your house.
He had this pregame alliance on lock he was talking about. He said everything is set up. Nobody's going to see it coming.
Yeah. He loves these locks.
Well, Shane Powers is saying they have it on lockdown. Jeff Varner is saying, here's Shane Powers. He's in my alliance. So this has to be the same alliance that Shane Powers is talking about.
Okay. But there is no Shane. So one man down. Alliance is already down a member.
He's gone. He also says that Vetus is in this alliance.
Yeah. And so you can see Vetus through Shane. Shane certainly had a great relationship with Aris on his season. Kasiah 6 all the way. So you see that Shane and Vetus, you can very easily see how those two people are going to be linked together. And Vetus is one of the people in that video with Mikey and even in the interview with me, which is a really fun talk with Vetus. Vetus was saying, like, I'm so bummed that Shane's not here. I would have loved to work with Shane. And that speaks to some of the lies that were told in your interviews, I think, that they were both a little nervous.
Yeah.
Because they are part of each other's lives to some extent. And, you know, they didn't want to go back on any words or anything like that. All ruse, perhaps.
Yes, I believe so. And then also the other part of that is that Terry is supposedly with Jeff Varner in this pregame alliance as well. And what really irked me, but stood out in my mind, was I remember talking with Terry Dietz, and I asked him, okay, what about Vetus? And Terry Dietz was adamant. He said, Vetus is not his brother. Aris is this, Aris is great, Aris is whatever. And he sent me to tell him he did not like Vetus.
Right. Well, in Terry's defense, Terry holds to that in all of these interviews with me. He said that he says that he would like to work with Vetus, but he says, I haven't seen Vetus in 9 years. Like, I haven't hung out with Vetus since that Panama finale. I don't know Vetus very well, but he seems like a guy I would like to go up against, or work with, rather. And Vetus says the same thing. So I don't know if they had a relationship really going into it, but if they were telling you that they didn't want to work with each other, it seems like they were lying, at least as far as this pregame thing goes.
Interestingly, in this one tribe, you have Vetus, you have Jeff Varner, and you have Terry Dietz, all on the same tribe.
Yeah. And Wigglesworth.
And Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah. It's the squad.
Yeah.
Would Shane have been on this tribe?
I'm not sure.
You got to imagine that Shane would have to be on the other tribe, and the confessionals there would be freaking phenomenal.
Yeah.
My whole alliance, I'm getting clipped over here. So that's clipped from my alliance.
That's very interesting to watch, to see how that ultimately plays out. Also, Jeff Varner claims that he has alliances with a bunch of other people, including Spencer and Shireen and PG, who are also on this tribe.
Yeah, and Kelly Wentworth, he mentions as well. He basically names the entire tribe.
Which I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. It's such a good video. I didn't know about that. He mentions to me in our interview in the pregame that he has something really tight with Wentworth, but he tells me, and he says this in the CBS videos as well, that Spencer is on his early hit list. So I had no idea that there was any connection there in the pregame or anything like that.
Yeah. Is there going to be a second video with the people from the other tribe, or it just so happens that every single person that's in any of Jeff Varner's alliances happens to be on his tribe?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I'm telling you that there weren't a ton of people who were like confessing to pregame alliances with me. There was a lot of, I like this person, I like that person, that's somebody that I think I can do stuff with, but no one saying, I have a thing with that person. Varner, I think, to my knowledge, just off the top of my head, is the only person who said to me, I've got something with that.
So it's entirely possible that Jeff Varner will be the first player voted out of the season. That he's in full-on Zane mode from March and has just been making a final two deal with every single person in the cast.
Incredible. But no one else was saying that kind of stuff to me. It was a riveting conversation. I think I talked to him for almost 20 minutes, and I did not want to kick him out of my room because he was so funny. He's such a funny guy. It was really amazing. And this video that Mikey posts really captures just how hilarious Varner is and just how hard this dude is working the pregame. You know, there were no breaks. There were no breaks for this guy. This guy hopped right in.
So it's fun to talk about these pregame alliances. Again, I don't think any of this stuff really holds too much water. I think especially as we're getting to these modern day seasons of Survivor, I don't know if you can go back to heroes versus villains and point to the pregame alliance that actually impacted that game past the first couple days, or in Blood versus Water, where that ultimately was something that carried any weight going too far into the game. I think in the first couple days of the game, it definitely could be a thing, but I think when all is said and done, I don't think the pregame alliances are going to really carry the day.
Do you think Troyzan had a pregame alliance?
I bet Troyzan had a pregame alliance with everybody also.
Do you think anyone asked him that in his AMA?
Oh, was that in the Troyzan AMA?
I don't know. Do you think Jim Rice had any pregame alliances?
I think Jim Rice had a pregame alliance with everybody. I think everybody had a pregame alliance with everybody.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
That's how you're operating.
That's what I think. All right. So let's go to number three. And number three is going to be the return of classic challenges, Josh. Tell us about this. Tell us about what you found out on location about the challenges this season.
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea, you know, this is something that you see in Heroes Villains as well, is they want to bring up a lot of challenges that have been done in the past. And I think that it fits really well here with the second chance theme is you guys are out here for your second shot at Survivor. You've all played once before. All of you are losers. Let's see if you can be winners this time around. And let's not just talk about that in terms of the entirety of the game. Let's talk about that in terms of steps along the way, the challenges. Let's bring some of these challenges from the past back to haunt you. And that happens right away with the very first immunity challenge of the season. They're bringing Quest for Fire back, the very first challenge Survivor ever ran. They're adding a twist at the end that Jailbreak is going to be the final stage of Quest for Fire. So you got to do the thing where you put the poles together and you got to get the key and you got to get it back and you got to get through there and then you win. I think that they're trying to screw with these people as much as they can. They're trying to lean on the buttons that really, you know, kind of triggered these people out of the game their first time. If it was involved with a challenge, I think that that's something that they are going to be trying to lean on. But also in the Gordon Holmes interview, Jeff talks about how it's not just challenges from the past that people have lost that they are going to be bringing into the mix. They are also talking about just, you know, classic challenges that they like.
Survivor Bowling.
Survivor Bowling is, I can, exclusive right now, Survivor Bowling is back. It's actually, I have no idea.
I heard it's the final three challenge this season.
I went bowling the other week, if that counts for anything.
How great would it be if the final challenge is bowling?
Or shuffleboard? Yeah. Shuffleboard. Final three.
Like, or it's all like going to come down to this. One ball.
What if it was just like a trilogy of those types of games? It's shuffleboard, it's bowling.
Followed by the Fiji dancing. Yeah.
Bocce, then Fiji dancing. Yeah, that'd be really good. Too bad no Fiji people left.
So the final tribal council is like the Billy Madison final battle of like the 10 worst challenges in Survivor history.
Yeah, the academic decathlon. It's happening.
All right, so the classic challenges are coming back. Very excited to see that. What's a challenge that you really hope they bring back?
Oh, a challenge I really hope that they bring back. Not Schmergen Brawl, because I don't want anyone to die. I really would like it if no one died. I love that. You know, I love the Rob Zabaknik Memorial Slingshot Challenge. You know, the big lacrosse thing that mm-hmm.
I feel like they do that pretty often.
They do that pretty often. They did do that in Worlds Apart. I love that challenge. I'd love to see that. Gross food challenge, of course. I feel like that is coming. One of the things that I got to do while I was on set was they just brought out some boiled scorpions for a few of us journalists and were like, hey, you want to eat these? That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a feeling that gross food is going to be on the menu. I don't know for sure. I feel like that's going to be something that might happen.
If you have Kimmy Kappenberg in the mix.
You kind of have to do it.
They did it when they brought Jervis back.
You kind of have to do it. I feel like that's definitely going to be in the mix. And then in terms of just like looking at some of these others, you know, with Varner, like, are they going to do something with, they want to put poles in there? Do they want to see how long you could stand on a pole for and stand it? You know, you can imagine that that could be something that's in the mix.
All right. So classic challenges are going to be back, including our first challenge of the season, Josh.
Yeah. Quest for Fire, which I ran. I got to test this one out. It was a ton of fun. Before we got on the line to start talking about the seven things, I was actually writing about my experience from Quest for Fire. And
so you got to play the exact challenge that they did?
Yeah, I got to do Quest for Fire. I got to test it out a few days before they ran it. I got to tell you, it was actually the last thing I did on the day that I interviewed everybody. So I did all the interviews at Ponderosa. I got on a boat. I got to the challenge beach. I got to run Quest for Fire. Very, very fun. Did not go well for me.
Did you lose?
I won't spoil how my team did, but I can tell you that.
Wait,
I did not.
That's a spoiler?
Because I'm writing it. I want to spoil the ending of my thing. All right. I didn't do great. I can tell you that. I did poorly. I did very poorly. And I walked away from Quest for Fire saying, yeah, I would be the first person voted out of Survivor.
And what do they do? Press Corps versus the Dream Team? Is that what it is?
So this was, they couldn't get everybody from the press corps on this one. There were still some interviews that were going on. So I was actually, of the me and Dalton and Gordon contingent, I was the only one who was able to run this one. So it was a mix of Dream Teamers. It was mostly Dream Teamers. Parvati was on this team, versus a bunch of other Dream Teamers. And then I can't talk about what the other immunity challenge in the next episode is in episode two, but I ran that one as well. And that was more a traditional press versus Dream Team. The challenges are freaking amazing. They're very, very fun.
And was it impressive to see that whole build when you're out there?
Yeah, it was really something to get out there to see like the big tiki torch in the background and the raft and everything. It looked like Survivor. It looked like you were kind of like walking into this painting of Survivor, and it was very surreal. And suddenly, very quickly, very terrifying for me, who is the doughiest schmuck on the planet and is not really an athlete and doesn't know things about sports. And I suddenly had to realize, oh my God, I'm going out there. It was very scary. Very, very frightening, but it was really cool at the same time.
Okay, so that's the first immunity challenge of the season. But what about the way that the season starts?
Yeah, so they're doing the marooning. I got to witness the marooning. It happened actually on, it was the day that the marooning happened was the 15-year anniversary of the first episode of Survivor ever airing. So it was a really kind of cool feeling. And, you know, Probst kind of, he says that to everybody around us before they bring the contestants in. And it was just, it felt like a real historic moment was happening. And what's going on out there is we're in the middle of the sea. We've got this big cargo ship that's out there. Probst is standing on it. And the two tribes are rowed up to the cargo ship. And basically the deal is this. We've got all the supplies you need on this boat. Everything you could possibly want, you know, chickens, fruit, pots, pans, damn, knives, damn, anything you need, you can come and get it. Not rice. Rice exists. It's on, not Jim Rice either. He's not here. He is not here. There is a stash of rice. There's an extra bit of rations that's further out from
not
the boat.
Jim Rice's stash?
No, that's something else.
Okay.
That's not on the boat. Maybe it was. I didn't see it. There's this other boat that's much further out that they've got this supply of rice out there for. And you can spend as much time as you want on this cargo ship getting whatever you need. But the first person who gets to the rice over there gets to claim it. And they're going to start the day they're going to start the game with a food advantage over the others. So it becomes kind of, what do we want to do? How much do we want to focus on what's on the ship versus going out and getting the guaranteed food supply? And unsurprisingly, without spoiling how it works out, it gets very intense very fast.
Some excitement off the bat.
Obviously a bit different. We're 30 seasons removed from the first marooning back in Borneo. So it's been a long time and things have changed on Survivor. But there was that sort of feeling of just like panic and pandemonium as everyone's trying to gather their crap and make sure that this thing is going on. It was very, very, very cool. And I think it's going to be really fun to see in the first episode for sure. You know, 90-minute episode, there's going to be a lot going on.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for a heroes versus villains type scenario of go and have a physical battle to start off the game, but this is pretty good.
It's pretty physical.
Pretty physical. Okay, good.
Pretty physical.
I like this. Let's go to number four. And number four is going to be a change in the way that the hidden immunity idols are hidden.
Yeah.
Dalton Ross had this on Monday on Twitter. He announced that Survivor is going to be hiding the idols this season at the challenges. Josh, can you talk us through the logistics of how this is going to work?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all the credit in the world, as Probst gives Dalton all the props for this, and Dalton rightfully should claim this. This was a twist that he'd been championing for a while, saying this would be a really cool thing if you were hiding idols at challenges. And Survivor has finally taken the bait. And it's a really cool idea. Basically, around camp, you know, you could go around, you could go looking for idols, all that stuff that we always see. But instead of finding an idol, you're going to find an idol clue at your camp. And the clue is basically going to say, hey, sweet, you found the clue. Idol's not here. Here's where the idol is. And it will draw a map for you on the clue that is going to show what the challenge looks like and an exact location at the next challenge where the idol will be. If you have the guts, go and grab it. So the challenge is no longer where is the hidden immunity idol. You know exactly where the idol is, but you have to have the stones to go out and grab it. In the middle of a challenge, it might be in a fleeting moment where you only have a short window of grabbing the thing. Maybe you've got a longer stretch of time where you can find this thing. But the question is, like, do you sacrifice challenge performance to go and find an idol for yourself? If you do, how do you get the idol without anybody noticing? It's very intense. It's a really hair-raising idea, and I think it's awesome. I think that this is a really cool twist, and I'm almost surprised that it took so long for Survivor to arrive at this idea. I think it's a really natural progression of the way that Survivor hides its idols.
So many questions that I want to run past you.
Yeah, let's do it.
Number one, if this spectacularly does not work or leads to an unlikable player winning the game, Will Dalton Ross get crap at the finale a la Tyler Perry? Will Jeff go down to like, okay, well, we have Dalton here. Dalton had the idea that you guys all hated.
Yeah.
That ended up with the biggest, the person you all hate, Stephen Fishback, winning this season. Let's throw him under the bus. Dalton's like, I maintain it was, I thought it was a good idea.
I hadn't thought about that. I'm thinking about almost nothing else right now, and I would love to see that happen. I would love
chorus
to see
of boos
on live TV. That'd be very fun.
That's the problem with owning one of these ideas, because it doesn't go well.
I never want to be the guy who gave Survivor any ideas. I don't want to get in trouble.
Here's Josh Wiggler that he came up with the Medallion of Power this season.
No, you weren't supposed to say.
Yeah.
I paid great hush money for that to be secret.
Okay, so here's where I want to talk turkey with this.
Yeah,
so I'm on the beach. Say I'm on the Bayon tribe. I find the note. Hey, here's where the idol is at the challenge. I mean, does they change the clue every day for what the next challenge is going to be?
Yeah. So if you don't find the clue to the idol at the upcoming challenge, if you don't find that clue, then the clue is replaced with a clue to the next challenge. If you haven't found the clue to where the idol is, this is my understanding, is the idol will not be hidden at the challenge at all.
Got
so
it.
You gotta unlock the idol being at the challenge by finding the clue to the idol.
Is it the same idol for both tribes?
It's within the challenge. Like, it's on the challenge. It's not like, all right, the idol is in the woods over there. Go run off course and go find the idol. It's within the challenge. You're competing in the challenge, and somewhere within the competition lies an immunity idol. And if you have the clue, you know exactly where it is, and you know the exact moment that you would be able to get it. And it's just a matter of, you're going to do it or you're not going
to
do it.
It's going to be interesting to see.
What do you think of the idea, though? Do you like the idol at the challenge? I think it's awesome. I think it's a really cool concept.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I like it that it's different. I could see it being really, really compelling. I could also see it being something that's not ultimately a game changer.
Right. I don't know how long it'll last for. That was one of the questions that I asked Jeff when I sat down with Probst and I talked to him about all the twists of the season. And I said, is this how the idol is going to be found every time? Is the idol always going to be at one of these challenges? And he said it would be that way for at least the first round of idols. And then he added, every idol will have to be found a different way. There will be a twist to finding the idols. So the deeper we get into the season, this might go away and it might be replaced with something else. Who knows?
Okay. So we will see how the idols are hidden off the bat.
And if it sucks, tweet at Dalton Ross and laugh.
Oh, believe me, people will.
We don't need any help in burying that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with coming up with any of these. As soon as somebody doesn't like, it's like, yeah. Oh, I hate you. You made this twist.
But he's been around the block. He's used to it. He's good. He'll be fine.
I hope so. I'm sure. Number five also concerns the hidden immunity idol. Josh, the hidden immunity idol will not always look like the hidden immunity idol this season.
It might be a freaking stick.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Talk us through, what are they doing with the actual hidden immunity idols?
So the deal with the idol this season is no two idols are going to look alike. No two idols will look the same. You usually have on a given Survivor season that, unless you got a Tyler Perry idol, and that's going to look a little different. But for the most part, the idols look the same. You know, the idol on one beach will be the idol on the other. They will look identical. They will look the same. That way you will be able to cross-reference with other people if this is the idol, if that's the idol. It's usually pretty fair game. That's not going to be the case this time. An idol is going to look ornate in one person's hands. You know, it's going to be a beautiful, super authentic Survivor-looking idol. There also might be some idols that look like dog shit. There might be some idols that look terrible, and those idols are no less valid. It's just the way that they look. So you could come up to somebody with a log, you know, that has like a jewel on it and be like, hey, this is the immunity idol, and everyone's going to look at it and laugh in your face, but it might actually be the idol. Some of the idols might look like that. It's a really kind of terrifying thing that just trying to kind of extrapolate what that means for the show. It's like, how are you going to handle the problem of the idols once those are in play? Like, once that's a known quantity, if that becomes a known quantity, that idols look different from one another. It's terrifying. That's a really terrifying prospect.
This one I'm a little on the fence on. I'm not sure necessarily if this is a good thing or a bad thing if we're having all of these counterfeit idols in the game as well.
Yeah. I heard this idea, and the moment I heard it, I was just like on the floor loving it. So I was head over heels with it to begin with, but then again, I was very in a place where that was very easy to do with me. Talk me through some of your concerns, because I'd love to weigh that out, because I don't see too many reasons in my book that this is a bad thing.
Well, it's in the world where everybody has an idol, or at least a fake idol, is that necessarily really muddying the waters and making things more confusing than necessary?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there could be a scenario where it's great. We love the moment where Prince Siska and Eliza, it's an effing stick. I mean,
That's great.
But I don't know. I don't know what the idols look like. It's hard for me. I don't hear this and I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. Yeah. And I don't hear and like, oh, I hate that. I'm sort of like, I'm a moderate person, Josh.
Yeah,
I'm on the fence on this one.
I know.
I need to see it play out before I say, just like some of the stuff when it's like, boy, that doesn't sound like a good idea. I say, well, let's see. I could see where maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it's good. Who knows? But I'm going to reserve judgment.
I just think of like the point in Survivor history where if this had been, if the Siska stick had been an idol and Eliza comes up and plays that thing and it turns out to be legit, that's a super insane Survivor moment. And I think that there are, you know, some of the things, is it a little muddy? Is it a little cloudy? Perhaps, you know, almost definitely. And I think that that's the point. But I think it could lead to some real stunners in the vote. And that's really exciting to me, you know, people who are not going to believe you at all. And I think that in terms of like the idol bluff, how you choose to play that, if you get like a stick looking idol and you say, this is the idol, and everyone's like, no, it's not, we're going to vote for you tonight. Now suddenly you're drawing all the votes to yourself and you know you're getting voted for, so you can plan with that. I think that's really exciting.
See, I actually disagree with that. I think that the Siska moment is a great moment because he's a dumbass and it's a stick with a happy face on it.
How dare you call me a dumbass?
And it's a great moment because it's like, of course this isn't an idol, you idiot. It's a stick. And that's why it's a great moment. If it turned out that that actually was an idol, all of a sudden it's Eliza who looks like an idiot. And then when she sheepishly plays it, I guess that might be sort of an exciting moment. I think what makes it compelling and what makes it exciting is when, let's say last season, if the idols could look like anything, and then Joe makes a fake idol like last season, and then his fake idol is a lot more compelling to Mike, and maybe he can do something and potentially save himself with a fake idol, because it's a lot muddier if things are a real idol or things are a fake idol. So I think that the ability to manufacture the gun made out of soap is going to be a little more plausible in this scenario.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's a lot of different ways you could go. Personally, I think that if Eliza had played a stick and she bounced somebody out of Micronesia, that would have been very fun. I wouldn't change history for the world because it is a tremendously delicious moment. But I think that having that idea moving forward into this season of it could be just like this crummy looking thing, and that could be the end of somebody's game, I think that's really exciting. I think it's a cool bartering chip. I think what you just said, the fact that the fake idol, the fake gun, could suddenly have a lot more power, a lot more improvisational ability, I think that it opens up a lot of doors. And I don't know, you know, it's hard to say what it's going to result in. Like, it's hard to say how it's going to shake out. There's a lot of different ways that it could play. And that's exciting that we're talking about that 31 seasons into this show, that there is this thing that could be a completely new wrinkle to the game that could be very, very good, or it'll just be kind of meh. But I don't see it being very, very bad. I think it's going to be a really exciting TV moment whenever that comes up.
So then, does each idol come with a note? Because if it does, doesn't that sort of make it a de facto certificate of authenticity? And if somebody does not have the note, then do I not believe they have an idol?
Yeah, so that's the thing that's been thrown around a lot since this news came out. I don't know if the idols come with a note or not. I have no idea. I would assume that they do, because idols usually do. And that could be the idol buster. That could be the thing. A lot of people, you know, armchair Survivor fans like myself included, a lot of people have been saying, like, why don't you just go ahead and do that? Maybe that could bust this open. I don't know. I don't know if it comes with a clue or not, or it comes with instructions, rather. You got to assume probably, because it's an idol and that's how they play these things normally. And maybe that is a way of figuring it out. I think first you got to get to a place in the game where you know that this is a situation. I think that in order for people to know that this is a situation, I think that it has to blow up first. I think that it has to be, a gun has to go off. I don't think that people are going to be thinking about this in that way until a gun goes off.
What if the idle note needs to be destroyed within 5 minutes?
That'd be fun.
Or the idle is null and void.
Right. You have 5 minutes to eat the idle clue. It's a fruit roll up. It's edible.
You have the idol. It's like, okay, oh, great. This is the idol. Now destroy this note. Like, okay, put it in the fire. Put it in the fire.
Yeah.
Brad Culpepper comes down and yells at you. Put it in the fire.
That's what they did with him. They put him in the Second Chance Ballot. Now they've hired him onto the production.
Yeah. He comes on and you put it in the fire, and Jim Rice is in the boat with his stash, and yeah, they're going to reuse all of the Left Out 11.
Okay. That sounds like a good
thing. That'd be fun.
Not bad. They're just putting them to work.
Yeah. So interesting. We'll see how that ultimately ends up getting played out.
Yeah. I really love the idea. I think it's cool. I think it's unique. I think it's interesting. I like Survivor trying new things that aren't shockingly drastic. I like that this isn't, like the idol itself has new powers or anything like that. It's just a new look to the idol that could mean a lot or it might mean a little. But I think that the potential for it to mean a lot is very much there. And I think that that's exciting. I think for the show where it is right now, it feels to me like a fresh, energetic idea. And what's really cool about this is, and this was something I asked Probst about, is, season 32 is already filmed by the time that they're filming 31. Cambodia that we're going to see Second Chance is going to be the season we see in the fall, but the season that we see in the spring was taped before Second Chance started. So they had to think about where things were going. This is what Jeff says. He talks about trying to kind of logistically figure out. So if this is how the idols look here in season 31, where we're doing this different thing with idols at challenges, idols looking different, how do we evolve that for 32? So they already have, they were already thinking about what this could possibly lead to. And when we get to season 32, which is obviously many moons away, I think that they are going to hopefully have some new evolution of the idol there. And I think that that's a pretty fun concept as well. I think that the creative on Survivor this year must have been a really weird science project. Not weird science, but I think it seemed like a strange thing. And I think, I don't know, for me, that's very exciting. I think that that's really fun.
So like for season 32, they had Brad Culpepper and Monica Culpepper coming down and saying, throw it in the fire. Do it for Monica.
Throw in the fire for Monica.
Yeah, throw it in the fire. And so they said, okay, well then let's walk it back a step. And in this version in 31, we'll just have Brad Culpepper.
Just have Culpepper come out.
Yeah. Say, throw it in the fire.
One Culpepper is enough for this.
Okay. All right. Before we get to number six, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at Blue Apron.
Oh, wow.
Josh, and Blue Apron is fantastic. Blue Apron allows you to get through the mail. They send you everything you need to make outstanding, high-class recipes that are delicious and very nutritious. Now, unlike a lot of my friends, they end up having to get marooned and then having to go and fight other people to get their groceries and swim 300 yards in the water just to get some rice. With Blue Apron, you don't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah, I would love some Blue Apron because I haven't eaten in a week because I've just been shackled to a chair writing about Survivor.
Well, Blue Apron makes it so you don't have to go and wait in line at the grocery store. They send you all the ingredients you need to start cooking in your house. If you love to cook or if you're interested in cooking, they give you the recipes and everything you need to learn to make these dishes in your house. They have a menu that's constantly updating. For instance, this week, some of the specials that you could get. How about a Southern style shrimp and grits with zucchini, corn, and cherry tomatoes?
That sounds complicated.
Yeah. Well, it's easy because they give you everything you need. You just got to put it together. It's like a puzzle. Or how about a plum and tomato salad with goat cheese toast?
That sounds good. I like goat cheese toast.
Sounds good. It's a better way to cook. Check it out. Go ahead and get your first two meals for free by going to blueapron.com/RHAP. That's blueapron.com/RHAP. Josh, you ready for number six?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Number six is that we are going to have a very interesting first tribal council, according to Jeff Probst.
Yeah, this is what's going on. They're doing Quest for Fire. The thing with Quest for Fire is it runs best at night. They want to capture, the dusk. They want the sun setting. They want it to look beautiful. But the fact that it's running so late, usually when Survivor runs their immunity challenges, there's time to go back to camp and figure out what you're doing. That's not going to be the case for this first tribal council. You're going to play Quest for Fire One side will win. The other side will lose. The side that loses has to go to tribal immediately. Immediate lockdown. No figuring things out. No talking with each other. Straight from the challenge to tribal council. It's a true Michelle Yee situation.
So Michelle Yee, of course, back in Survivor Fiji. One of my favorite seasons of Survivor.
Yes.
They had to go right from tribal. That was also... It was right after some sort of a weirdo tribe swap that was like for one challenge only.
Yeah, one time only. Yeah, it was like a demerge for one tribe only.
So that was probably, you're right, you talked about this in your article that you wrote with Jeff Probst to bring that back, because this is also people that are in a new tribe going into a first vote. There's also other times where the immunity challenge goes so late, including the tribal council where Jeff Varner got voted out.
That's right.
They just go right to tribal council because it got so late.
That's right. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen super often. It's happened before. I was trying to think, this has to be the earliest that they've done it. I can't think of another first time that they have just sent people straight to tribal council.
No, I don't think they've ever done that before.
Yeah. This is very mean. It's a very mean twist.
It's very fast. And now, they don't know about this, right?
Yeah, no, they have no idea. I mean, I don't have to tell you which tribe wins and which tribe loses this first challenge to tell you that the tribe that loses is not thrilled about this. This is very upsetting. This is very upsetting news.
Now, as part of the press corps, you're there. You're part of going to tribal council. What was it like to actually visit tribal council yourself?
It was awesome. I mean, I got to see this first tribal council for this first episode. I got to watch it from a distance. They've got like monitor hookup and everything. I'm not actually in the tribal council, but once it's over, I got to go there and kind of walk around. And the tribal council this season is beautiful. You know, they're really trying to go for this like open air temple theme with Cambodia. I think that they're really trying to lean into ancient Cambodian history this season. It was amazing. It's hot. Really hot at tribal council. They have tons and tons of fires and torches lit, and you just feel the heat. And you know, obviously these people are already very physically uncomfortable anyway playing Survivor. But I was sweating my little buns off at that place.
Now, I saw on your Twitter profile that you have a new Twitter picture, which is you at tribal council. If you want to see Josh mulling over who to vote for, you can see that at Round Howard on Twitter.
Photo credit to at Gordon Holmes is the man who took that photo.
Did you ever write anything on that parchment?
No, I didn't. You know why? Because I was like, one of the things about being there for the first time is like, I really felt like I was a bull in a china shop and I just didn't want to knock anything over. So I didn't want to write a name down on that thing and have somebody be like, hey, you're not supposed to write on the thing. So I got very nervous. I didn't do it. Too scared. It's so craven.
Is anything else surprise you about going to a tribal council?
No, you know, it was just really interesting to watch the process and to see, you know, Probst talking to all the people and seeing how it goes and watching the votes as they're coming up live. You know, I got to see kind of what the vantage point of the camera is when people are going up to the vote and holding the thing up to the camera and saying their spiel and all of that. So it was really intense watching it happen because, you know, before the person who's getting voted out knows that they're getting voted out, I know that that person is gone. So, but just to take it back to just like the rush to tribal council, what do you think about this popping up so early? Do you like that Survivor is forcing the first tribe that loses this season loses the first immunity challenge, just sending them, banishing them straight to tribal council? No time to talk, no nothing.
Well, I like that it feels like Survivor is saying, we're going to keep these guys on their toes. They think they know everything. They're the veterans. They want to come in with their little pregame alliances or whatever. And I think that they feel like, okay, well, let's just, you know, change up the pace on them. Maybe, you know, throw some stuff at the wall and see what we can do to throw them off their game. Unfortunately, I feel like this speaks a little bit to that. If you had a pregame alliance, I think this sort of is a little bit of an advantage going into this. It's like, okay, well, I'm not going to vote off the people I have a pregame alliance with.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is what Probst says to me when I ask him about this. And he says, you know, you're going to have to hope that you talked earlier because if not, you're screwed. And the big goal is to set in motion this idea that the season's going to be unique and you got to be on your toes because anything can happen. And so I think that that's really the idea that they're trying to encourage by having this happen. It's just like this, let's just throw you right into the fire. Let's throw you right to the wolves immediately. And I think that he's right. I think you want to hope that you talk to people. You want to hope that you have discussed options, you know, certain people, specific people, backup plans, all of this stuff. And, I think it's a recipe for an interesting tribal council.
Yeah. Very fun. So many interesting things about this season that I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Me too. I mean, I've been living with the first episode in my head for the past couple of months, but not knowing all the details about how everything happens. And so I'm really excited to see how some of this stuff plays out. I can't wait. I think that this could be a really, really strong premiere based on what I do know. But I don't know like all of the little details that get you from point A to point B to point C. So it's going to be very fun to see how it all plays out.
All right. Let me ask you a bonus question here. We'll call this 6A technically.
Okay. All right.
I feel like a lot was made about the weather this season. How was the weather from what you saw?
It was hot. It was real hot. If you look at that picture of me at Tribal Council, I'm super red. I'm remarkably sunburned.
Hot is fine. What about wet?
What about cute?
Yeah.
Very cute out there. It was rainy. It wasn't as rainy while I was there as some of the reports that I'd been seeing that Cambodia is going to have like this disastrous weather until one of my final days there where it just opened up and it was just dumping out of the sky. And I mean, even on like the milder days, it was raining once or twice every day, the wind howling, getting kind of stormy. But that one of those last days, I think it was my last full day there. It just dumped. And if that is what it's like routinely out there, that sucks. It's hot, it's humid, and it's just raining a lot. If that's the way that it is, that kind of rain, that's going to drive you insane. That's going to be really, really difficult. So it's beautiful out there. It's gorgeous. White sand beaches, this beautiful water. But man, it is hot. It is humid. And that one time that it just poured, if that's what it's like most of the time, that sucks.
Number 7, final point here today.
Yes.
We know that Stephen Fishback is going to be on this season, and there leaves us a hole here at Rob is a Podcast.
Oh, no.
Because Stephen Fishback and I, after every episode, talk about what happened. I always get it right. He's always wrong about stuff.
Always wrong. Always wrong about stuff. So you're bringing in Brad Culpepper so that you can be wrong about stuff.
Yeah.
No, we're bringing. You really have the guy who knows his math, knows his history.
No, we're bringing in Dan Foley so I can be right all the time.
Oh, my God. You know what? I can't say I disagree with the choice.
Yeah.
Dan is wrong.
Yeah.
I really can't. I really can't disagree.
But Stephen Fishback isn't going to be able to talk about this show this season because he's going to know what happens on the season. So we have been teasing for a long time that we are going to have a new replacement host for season 31 on Survivor Know-It-Alls.
That guy's
going
to suck.
Yes. And it's true. We are going to have a new Survivor Know-It-Alls host this season. And I could tell you now, for the very first time, there's going to be none other than the great Josh Wiggler. Josh, congratulations.
It was me. It was me.
Yes.
It's going to be me as T-Bird as the new co-host on Survivor Know-It-Alls.
So every Wednesday night, Josh will...
And we'll just show up.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes, very excited.
But you're going to be in the front seat and I'm going to be in the back. That's how this is
going
to work.
Well, we will be sitting, driving, and shotgun.
I will ride shotgun with you. That's fine.
Very excited to be talking about each episode of the show right after it airs, 9:15 p.m. Eastern, every Wednesday night. And we're going to go through all of it. Josh and I have been working together, watching every single season of the show over these last 14 months.
Is there anyone on the planet that you've talked about Survivor with more than me, other than the people you played in the Amazon with? Because I think that I've lapped the people you played All-Stars with.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think you're probably ahead of the people that I played in the Amazon with.
There's no way.
It's very possible.
Oh my God. Have we recorded that many hours?
I mean, we're closing on the Evolution Strategy is almost a 300 hour, if not over 300 hours of content.
Wow. But yeah, no, I have talked a lot of Survivor with you, Rob. We've talked about every single season of the show together.
We've talked about every single tribal council.
Every tribal council, every immunity challenge, every blindside, every everything. So I'm really pumped. I mean, we've been wondering, you know, what was going to happen after Evolution of Strategy. And then this came up that, you know, Stephen was going to be out in Cambodia. I'm really honored that you picked me. I know that there's going to be people say, oh, you didn't play Survivor before. But hey, I was out there.
Yeah.
I hope that counts for something. I've run a few challenges. I got to see all these people. I was one of the last friendly faces that Stephen Fishback got to see on his way onto Cambodia. So I'm really, really excited. I think it's going to be very fun. Hopefully it's going to be a really great season to talk about.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get back into this. And of course, right after the episode, we'll break it all down on our Wednesday night show and take your questions live every week.
Yeah. By the way, the first thing that Stephen said to me when I sat down with him for our interview is he had a message to convey to you.
Yes, what was that?
And he wanted me to write it down. so that I could get it exactly right. And I believe it was Rob is the worst know-it-all.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what he told me to tell you.
You know, Stephen Fishback and I are embroiled in a huge battle right now. Two battering rams. Have you seen that ET Canada, which is such a outstanding television show, Entertainment Tonight Canada.
Canada, they were out on set. I was there with all of those people who were working on this.
They do such a great job. Puts ET America to shame. And so ET Canada is actually doing a March Madness type bracket to determine the best Survivor player of all time.
Oh, man.
Have you looked at this today?
Oh, I haven't seen this. I didn't know that. All I've been thinking about is I want to see the ET Canada special on the new season of Survivor because these people brought a drone onto location. That's how serious these guys were.
They have this battle, and there are 32 matchups here in round one.
Okay. So give me some highlights.
Okay. So here we go. So you go through it, and you have to vote for each person. Uh-huh. And then you basically, I don't know how they did the seeding on this. It's a little wonky in terms of who is matched up against who. Like, for instance, the first question is Natalie Anderson or Tasha Fox, which is a rematch from Miss Survivor from this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you got to pick one.
Okay.
And you go through it. And then number two, this is going to be tough for you, Kim Spradlin versus Yao Man.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You can't make me choose. That's not cool. Oh, my God.
Well, it's funny that you should saying.
Where is Earl on the list?
He is on the list. Anyway, you could go through the whole thing, all 32 battles here at etcanada.com/battle. That's etcanada.com/battle.
So are you just plugging that because you really want to win this thing?
Well, my first round matchup here is against Stephen Fishback.
Oh, man. That's a really epic matchup for all the obvious reasons, but also because he's on the show, so he has the show platform potentially to lean on, and you've got RHAP. You've got Rob as a planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my God. This could be a real world war.
Really could be.
Holy crap.
So you go through all of these battles. There's actually some really interesting ones in terms of people. I'm looking at Brian Heidick versus Bob Crowley. Jenna Maraska versus Amber Mariano is one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like it has been for much of the winter rankings.
But then there's also some things that, like, Sandra Diaz-Twine versus Boston Rob. Like, that's really unfair first round draw.
It should be Sandra versus Sandra.
Well, they just counted people as one person. It's not Sandra 1.0 versus Sandra 2.0.
Yeah, no, that's difficult. Yeah, so there's some heartbreaking choices here in the first round.
Russell Hance versus Tyson Apostle.
I think I gotta go with our RHAP buddy.
Yeah. And so you can go down the list and then ultimately see how things are going. But I don't know. I'm getting a little nervous that Steven is on my heels.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do you think that Russell's going to beat Tyson?
Depends who votes. Yeah. Depends who votes.
Doesn't even like ET Canada.
So yeah, you can check that out. etcanada.com/battle. One of the other good ones they have is Penner versus Scoopin.
Penner versus Scoopin. Yeah. All right, so all those Scoopin' supporters better not be too late Larry's.
If Joe versus Ozzy.
Uh-huh, that seems fair.
Yeah. And then, Malcolm versus James.
They have all of these matchups, and then they have Kim Spradlin versus Yao Man?
Well, you can go and play it all out.
That doesn't make any sense.
One of my other favorite ones, it's Suri versus Sierra.
Because their names are similar?
Yes. Like, there is a little bit of, like, connective tissue between some of the people.
Should be Sierra versus other Sierras.
Yeah, they have Troyzan versus Coach.
It's not Troyzan versus Tarzan? Not doing the battle of the Zans?
I don't know if Tarzan made the cut. Rupert versus Lisa Welchel. I think that's a really interesting one.
Oh, man. Yeah. That Facts of Life support is really going to come in handy because it's one of the most globally famous shows of our modern time.
So very, very fun to play that out. etcanada.com/battle.
Wow, why didn't you get to this idea first? Why didn't you do the Survivor bracket?
It's hard for me to get people to vote on me on my website.
Well, so then you recuse yourself. Get yourself out of there.
Well, what would be the fun of that? Yeah.
I like your odds here. I think that you got this over Fishback.
I hope so.
He's the worst.
He's one of America's top 20 favorite Survivors.
He is, but this is Canada, and Canada loves Rob Sesame.
I do have a bigger base in Canada than Stephen Fishback.
Yeah, I think so. I like your odds.
All right, Josh, and there you have it. Those are the seven things you need to know about Survivor Cambodia.
All right. I'm really pumped about it. I'm loving this season. I'm very excited about this season. I'm really looking forward to putting some more of those stories out there into the universe. And I'm really excited when the season really picks up. I can't wait to talk about it with you every week. It's going to be very fun.
Yeah, we are under 1 month away. Tomorrow would be, what, 4 weeks?
Yeah, man. It's coming up.
It's coming up.
Coming up, man.
That's my biggest night of the year, where it's the Big Brother finale and the Survivor premiere all in one night. The following week, we will be live in New York at Caroline's Comedy Club. Sold out show for this season's live Survivor Know-It-Alls.
That's awesome. Sold out already?
Sold out already. Sold out in about 5 days.
Oh, my God.
And so that's going to be coming
up. Sold out so fast that they knew I was on there.
Yeah. They're going to cancel now.
Going to get some Sex and the City style refunds coming
up. No.
Yep.
Hopefully we're going to have some Survivor alumni in the house talking to a lot of different people. So that's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be for the second week of the show on the 30th. So looking forward to that. So Survivor season is coming down the pike. We're going to do all sorts of stuff. No Corinne cast. I know a lot of people have been asking about that. Are you going to have a Corinne preview?
That's her choice.
She does not like to talk about returning players.
Uh-huh. Are you going to have like an analog for the Corinne podcast? Is there going to be a doppelganger for the Corinne podcast?
Probably not. Probably not. I don't think so.
No trash talk.
I think that's Corinne's thing.
What about a Shane cast?
No, I think that Shane would probably be too close to everything. Like, I have a feeling that Shane talked to all these people once they got home and probably knows too much.
That's the scary thing about the season.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Who knows what?
That's my biggest challenge, I think, with booking the guests for the season. I don't want to talk to people that ultimately are going to know how this all plays out.
All right, well, you have your lie detector on full display right now. You know, you've been burned with these preseason interviews, so now you really got to grill these people to figure this out.
I hope people don't take it as that I have been burned, but it was a little bit. I understand that people are going to be lying to me, but it's just a little eye-opening to like, oh, wow, probably everybody's lying to me.
Rob, this should be exciting. You got to play Survivor again.
Yeah.
You didn't even have to leave your chair.
Well, that's good. That's how I like it.
Yeah, that's what I like.
That's what I like.
Yes.
Of course, you can listen to more of Josh and I as you wait for Survivor Know-It-Alls this season in the Evolution of Strategy. Chapter 26, talking about Survivor Karamoan, is around the corner. We had a lot of fun talking about Survivor Philippines as well, which is out now.
Yeah, and you and I just started recording the second to last chapter today. We started recording San Juan del Sur. I thought it was very fun. I thought we had a really lively talk about the first episode of San Juan del Sur.
Well, Josh loves any talk about Survivor San Juan del Sur.
Hey, listen, I'm a big Survivor 29 fan. I'm a meat collector.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
If you want to hear any of that, or if you want to listen to the first season and talk about Kelly Wigglesworth, all of our Kelly Wigglesworth conversation is completely free. That you can go and check that out at evolutionofstrategy.com and listen to and download chapter one for free. It's 6 hours long. That was when we were just young lads recording Evolution of Strategy before we started making the average chapter about twice as long as the first one is.
Oh my God. I feel like, yeah, some of them are like four times as long as that first one. It's crazy.
Not really. Quite, but it's getting there.
Close.
It's getting
close.
There.
Yep.
Okay. Of course, you could follow Josh Wiggler on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. Josh, yeah. Do you have a hashtag for this episode?
How about hashtag Rob's lie detector?
I think it's well established that that is not good.
That we're all going to invest in and get you before the inevitable second chance season.
That's fine. Go for it.
Right.
Of course, you can follow me on Twitter as well. I'm at Rob Cesternino. We always want to hear from you guys in the comments of robhasawebsite.com. I'm so excited to get back to talking about Survivor with you guys. We're going to do so many preseason podcasts, so many podcasts leading up to the season. It's all underway. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for the Rob as a Podcast main podcast feed. Josh, anything else?
No, just that preemptively, I'm the worst know-it-all, and I can't wait to be that guy.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for us. If you want to check out Josh's articles, go to our link, robhasawebsite.com/parade. That's going to be updated daily with each of his new links. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye.